top Fox News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, here we are midweek here. Thanks so much for listening. We got Brett Baer lined up, back off vacation or a working vacation. Michael Pillsbury, author of 100-Year Marathon, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. And Michael will talk about this new alliance between, or this flourishing alliance between Russia and between North Korea. First time a Russian leader has visited, I think, in 21 years in North Korea. They have provided a lot of the artillery, a lot of the weaponry, as Russia was running out to allow them to continue to pound Ukraine. And now we're watching this alliance crop up in real time. How concerned should we be? Michael Pillsbury on that. So we have a lot to discuss. Don't forget, if you ever have to leave your local affiliate, go to the Fox News app. You could hear the show. Just click on watch on the Fox News app, and then you could see the show, too, because we've got three great cameras and a brand-new studio. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We didn't shut it down completely, but essentially major social distancing in even schools was the right thing. Initially, to close it down was correct.
I'm not talking
keeping
about initially.
It for a year was not a good idea.
So that now, was a mistake in retrospect. We will not repeat it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
And it was your mistake, Dr. Fauci, always great at passing the buck, which makes me think his book deserves to be on the fiction list, not the nonfiction list. Rewriting government history in real time won't work this time, as the author of The Condescending Misinformation, Dr. Anthony Fauci, tries to sell his book and rehab his reputation. The Senate held a hearing. We have the results.
Number two.
It's a serious question in light of the president's halting gait at times, but also in the recent wake of right-wing media selectively editing video to claim Mr. Biden wandered off.
The far right used selectively edited video to claim that Biden was wandering off like some dementia patient.
He was, and we didn't edit it. And you know that. Everybody knows that. They know that. 2024, the former president relentlessly hitting battleground states while Joe keeps funds flowing behind closed doors yesterday with the Clintons in Virginia. We have the latest polls, game plans, and messages.
Number one.
Today I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including dreamers who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, landed jobs in high-demand, high-skilled professions that we need to have grow to see our economy grow.
Whatever. Killers coming through the border, not a catchphrase, but a fact. You can no longer say there is no cost to breaking our border wide open, Mr. President. Meanwhile, he finds new devious ways to break our immigration system using executive orders, litigation to follow. Brett Baer, chief political anchor of Fox News, anchor special report. Welcome back, Brett.
Thanks, Brian.
Hey, so was it a space vacation?
Oh, this was a full-on vacation, longest one I've taken with my family in a long time. We went overseas to the south of France, and it was great, really great to unplug. And I barely picked up the phone, which is a rarity. And, it was a full-on vacation.
Because I was watching your space pieces. I didn't know if you were pumping them out in real time. They're great, just about where we are and all the advances.
No. I had planned, like, to be off, and I said I'd love to do a series of pieces, you know, one for each day that I'm off. So we worked really hard, went over to NASA. And, you know, there's just so many fascinating things that we often don't have time to cover. And so we made time.
So the one thing that I don't understand, and I did this for Fox Nation, did some space pieces. Why are they reluctant to just to say we are in a race with China? Why are they reluctant to say, you know, China landing on the dark side of the moon is a problem? We have to get on that moon quick. They might be a little bit ahead of us. Why do they not want that?
Yeah, you know, you talk to them privately, and they're very much saying that. Very much saying that. But I guess there may be this administration is trying to walk a fine line somehow with China, which is interesting. You know, I mean, I think Chinese policy and how we as a country deal with China is a big, big topic for this election.
So let's talk about the border. So we have this horrific rape of a 13-year-old, and we had some street justice as some local officials, some local people in uptown New York were able to meet this guy at a bodega. They thought they recognized him. They were able to hold him back till the police came, and they got him. And he had crossed over El Paso, told to leave in 2022, obviously didn't, creating havoc, rapes. Then we have this murderer of Rachel Marin, ends up in Maryland, was caught in a bar in Tulsa, came across four times. Three times he rejected him. The fourth time he was a gotaway. And we know he looks to be a gangster wearing the Bulls paraphernalia, which evidently that's this leading gang in South America has. So this is a problem. You can no longer say when Trump's on the stump, well, you're not sending in the best and they're emptying their prisons. No, they are. And that's not a talking point. Your thoughts about this conversation?
Yeah, I think it's a major issue. I think it's going to be a big issue in the campaign. I bet it'll be a talking point for the former president in the debate next week. You know, it's hard to imagine a bigger issue that faces and affects more people in this country, not just along the border.
Here is what Joe Biden said yesterday, offering condolences to the Marin family, but said this, cut three.
We can both secure the border and provide legal pathways to citizenship. We have to acknowledge that the patience and goodwill of the American people is being tested by their fears at the border. They don't understand a lot of it. These are the fears my predecessor is trying to play on.
They don't understand a lot of it? These are the fears my predecessor is trying to play on? That might have been something in 2016, because even Republicans were nervous about Trump talking like that. But in 2024, that won't fly, Brett, unless you think that I'm in a bubble.
No, I don't think you're in a bubble. I think there are real challenges policy-wise. If you say you're going to deport 20 million people, you know, how does that look? What does that look like? How does it happen? And I think that's a real policy question. But as far as the issue and the emotion of it and the legitimacy of it, you can talk about asylum rules. You can talk about protecting people from deportation. But unless you're talking about shoring up the security at the southern border and stopping the flow that has not stopped since the executive order on asylum rules, then you're not really dealing with the whole problem. They will say they had a bipartisan deal that fell apart because Trump said he wanted the political issue. I think if you look into that more, it wasn't a panacea, and they should have passed H.R. 2 from the House early on.
But that's who they're going to lean on. And remember, Brett, why this whole bipartisan committee actually took off with Senator Lankford. He's a great guy. And the reason why they put it forward, and it wasn't, I was talking to Mark Thiessen about it, he wrote a great column on it, breaking down why it wouldn't work and how it would have saddled Donald Trump should he win rather than helped him. But having done that, the only reason it happened is because he couldn't get Ukraine and Israel aid passed. And to do that, the Republicans say, come to the table with a border proposal. And they agreed to do something on a bipartisan level. The product wasn't something Republicans could sign off on and Trump didn't want. But that was not on the volition of Joe Biden, who said we have to solve this thing at all.
It wasn't. It was part of a negotiation. But now they will use that as a club to say that we had a solution and it was not dealt with politically. I'm not saying that that's going to work. But it is a legitimate political argument to make that simplified without the nuance in between can be pretty effective.
So this is the proposal. President Biden on Tuesday announced a large-scale immigration program that will affect about 500,000 people. Homeland Security said they call it parole in place, will allow immigrants to apply for work permits and deportation protections if they've lived in the U.S. for 10 years. Their program requires undocumented spouses to file necessary paperwork and pass a criminal background check that doesn't apply to future migrants. The president said the actions he announced will go into effect later this summer. Right now, if you are married here illegally, married to someone legal, you have to go back to your country and then apply to come back. And they say, we don't want to have that anymore. But what is it also saying? If you're here illegally, wait long enough and you'll get what you want.
Yeah, and listen, there is a sympathetic part here that progressives love. Independents, you know, are okay with once you make the case like the spouse has been here 10 years, are you going to separate this family? But you start making policy decisions like this, where does that stop? And how do you deal with the main issue, which is the flow across the border every day? You have to deal with the people here sometime, some way. Not sure executive orders that can be changed president to president is the way to go.
Lastly, the president of the United States is going on the offense with this convicted felon. They're rolling out a $50 million campaign calling Donald Trump a convicted felon. He said it yesterday. in the fundraiser with Terry McAuliffe hosted in Virginia. He's a convicted felon. I'm curious to see, when the people you talk to, they weren't leaning into this at first. Do you think this could think this will be a good mallet for Joe Biden to use?
I think he's going to use it in the debate to try to get under Trump's skin, and he may be successful if the former president gets riled up over repeated use of that word. If he then goes after Hunter Biden, the president's son, who's a convicted felon, you know, is there a blowback on the drug sympathy thing? Who knows? I think that they look at the polls, the new polls, that show some softening in independence when asked about the question of the former president's conviction. That said, most people also say that these things are politically motivated, at least the New York ones.
Yeah, we'll see what happens. I think July 11th is as big as almost as big as the debate to see what kind of sentence the president's going to get. And then, of course, the appeal will go in place regardless. Brett, thanks so much. Have you named your panel yet?
Have not as of yet, but they'll be good.
Okay, 10 people get notified every morning, and then you post the roster, and those others,
the lottery.
Those other 7 have to go home. Is that the way it works?
It is. They're voted off the island.
That's the way it is. Brett Baer, thank you. Welcome back. All right. 1-866-408-7669. There's a lot going on today. I mean, when it comes to strategy, turns out in Axios today, fascinating. The president's plan is to emphasize January 6th to beat Donald Trump, emphasize political violence to beat Donald Trump, and talks about how he denied the election. He thinks, does Joe Biden and his small team, that'll be enough to win. Democrats that doubt dissenters in his circle are essentially kicked out of the circle. Other Democrats who want Joe Biden to win are worried that won't work. Do you think it'll work? I don't. I think it's so overdone January 6th. I think it's so overdone 2020. I do believe Jake Tapper and Dana Bash will bring it up most of the 90 minutes to try to get Donald Trump to say that he lost and January 6th was his responsibility. I think that there's ways to get around that. We'll discuss that too. Right now, in the latest Maris Poll, Trump and Biden tied at 49. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. From the Fox News Podcasts Network.
I'm Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor and editor of the Transom.com daily newsletter. And I'm inviting you to join a conversation every week. It's the Ben Domenech Podcast.
Subscribe and listen now by going to FoxNewsPodcasts.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. We got a lot to discuss this hour. We got Michael Pillsbury coming on in about 10 minutes. I want to get to the bottom of the North Korea-China situation. I thought it was interesting. The EU went up to China and said, okay, you want to dump a whole bunch of your cheap cars on us, right? Got an idea. Why don't you build your cheap cars here? Why don't you bring your, like Toyota does in America, like BMW does in the U.S. and Canada and Mexico, why don't you bring your manufacturing here instead of manufacturing for a dollar an hour there? And then we'll see how that goes. Maybe we'll be open to lifting some tariffs and some barriers, because you do things for such low rates, you violate the World Trade Organization policies, and you dump cars over just saying you're afraid of the leverage that you think we're going to be afraid of the leverage that you have because of so much business that you do, and that the EU and the European Union citizens want cheap cars. I love that. And I'll talk to Mike Pillsbury about that. I guess I know I tell you right now what China's going to say. Yeah, don't think so. So the other thing that really bothers me more than anything is what happened over the last 2 or 3 days. And that is, we watched Joe Biden wander away at the G7. They said it was edited to make him look bad. They watch him need Barack Obama to grab his hand and push him off the stage. They said that was taken out of context, and there was nothing wrong with that. And then they, of course, watched Joe Biden eat his words yesterday, and they say that there's nothing wrong here. Listen to this, cut 13.
Thanks to all the members of Congress and Homeland Security Secretary. I'm not sure I'm going to introduce you all the way.
Right. You forgot his name. Mayorkas. What is that? KJP, what are you going to say about that? Is that a deep, cheap fake? I mean, out of all the excuses, you just say, you know, the president was looking at a parachutist who landed over there. Though it was odd, everybody's looking straight ahead by the guy who just landed right in front of you, but he wanted to just walk away. And then you see how slow that he put his glasses on. You can see something's wrong. And then you watch him freeze while everyone was at least swaying, not dancing, but swaying at the Juneteenth celebration with Kirk Franklin up on stage. And when people criticize and they say, this is bizarre, guys, check this out. They're not being nice. So now here comes the spin. Cut 15.
It's a serious question in light of the president's halting gait at times, but also in the recent wake of right-wing media selectively editing video to claim Mr. Biden wandered off.
The far right used selectively edited video to claim that Biden was wandering off like some dementia patient.
Now, we know the Post is basically disgusting. A tabloid, but it's not on the cover of the Times or the Washington Post. But I wanted to pick it up in there and start telling people, this is fake, this is fake.
There's a growing and insidious trend in right-wing media, broadcast, print, and social media. It is to take highly misleading and selectively edited videos of President Biden directly from Republican National Committee social media accounts and then use those videos to spread messages virally to cast doubt on President Biden's fitness for office.
He doesn't have to. He's not fit for office. You know that. I know that. We have a lot of Democrats listening to the show. You know that. He's not fit for office. The only person who's in his prime and not fit for office is the vice president. Best insurance policy the President Biden has ever done, because he might have had so much momentum. If there was someone with more talent who was more conversant, who would be able to pull off a task without giggling, or just pull off a task, period, and then you can giggle all you want, then there'll be such pressure on Joe Biden a year ago, he probably wouldn't have run at all. So I think President Trump would be smart not to bring that up, his condition anymore, to get ready for the debate. 90 minutes, two breaks, can't talk to your staff, can't come out with notes. Going to be fascinating. It's going to be a week and a day from today. We're finally going to get a sense of who's got who. Meanwhile, President Trump pretty much off script yesterday, having a great time in Racine, Wisconsin, and trying to clear up the record that he does love Milwaukee, where the RNC will be. Cut 17.
Thank you very much. Wow. Oh, and you know, I love Milwaukee. I was the one that picked Milwaukee, I have to tell you. I was the one that picked it. These lying people that they say, oh, he doesn't like Milwaukee. I love Milwaukee. I said, you got to fix the crime. We all know that.
But what he said is behind the scenes, because the city's horrible to that degree. The same thing you say about Chicago and in many sections of New York. It doesn't mean you hate it. People that are there say, I know how great Chicago could be, but right now it's in horrible condition. And the only way it won't seem like that is if they get hire private cops along with the current cops, and push all the criminals out to the outskirts as long as the DNC is there. It's going to cost $1 zillion. Plus, you don't need Illinois. I don't even know why you pick Chicago. So you say it's a once great city that's now overrun with crime and in desperate need of cops with Milwaukee. Nice city, great history, not in good shape right now. Bad mayoral leadership, bad leadership from the governor's mansion. It has great potential. Besides the Bucks, why go there? And that's what he should say. And I have no problem with that. So we'll see. That's going to be a big theme among the other networks. All right. So glad you're here. We bring it global for a little while next, and then we'll take your calls to finish up this hour.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome to the Cold War 2.0. We now have Russia and China declaring that they have no limits to their friendship. We now have Putin, who's going to North Korea, clearly with the approval of China. China decides what North Korea does and doesn't do. And so they're now cementing their alliance, their axis of evil, if you will. And it wasn't just Putin going to North Korea. This was a summit meeting, because Putin brought all of his top leaders, his foreign minister, his defense minister. They're there to talk about their military relationship, their economic relationship, and how they're going to scramble the United States.
Yeah. So how do you feel about that? That decrepit hermit kingdom in North Korea is getting a lifeline. It's going to be impossible to get anything done in terms of sanctions at the UN Security Council, because Russia is now using their artillery and going to help them out culturally, secure with trade, security, and investment. Michael Pillsbury knows the region as well as anyone, author of the 100 Years Marathon, senior fellow at the Heritage Foundation. So, Michael, how concerned should we be about this new alliance?
I think Putin said it best at his press conference just a few hours ago, Brian. He called it a truly breakthrough document. I think there'll be some effort to minimize this and say, well, Joe Biden expected it and it's no big deal and it's just a meeting just for optics. I think that's mistaken. I think Putin is telling the truth that this is a truly breakthrough document. It's the beginning of a new global realignment where, I hate to say axis of evil, it's been said before by the Bush administration, but some kind of alignment is taking place between the greatest critics or the greatest enemies of the United States and the world, where they're getting together more and more often, and now they move into the defense military area. I think you know, Brian, that the price of an artillery shell is a crucial thing here. Artillery shells made by us or made by the Germans to help Ukraine are $6,000 each. Apparently, the Russians are purchasing the same shells to use against Ukraine for $600 each, 10 times cheaper and more plentiful. Even Blinken had to admit yesterday that the U.S. government's now revealing about 11,000 containers of munitions, drones, and artillery shells have now been sent from North Korea to Russia. So this is a new world we're entering, and Putin has done us a favor by calling it a breakthrough document.
He is, and we used to interdict those weapons going in and out. Why aren't we interdicting them?
It would be an act of war, and they're going by railway instead of by ship. We can't invoke the old Maritime Security Initiative and say this is proliferation. It's very clever what the North Koreans have done too, Brian. They seem to have extracted something that Putin probably didn't want to give, which is a renewal of their old 1961 defense treaty, that Russia will come to the aid of North Korea, especially if the U.S. tries to threaten it. I'm assuming that this also means that Russia will vote against sanctions for North Korea. That was a big bit of good news for President Trump, is he got both China and Russia to support him on massive sanctions on North Korea. And then he made his visit and attempted to stop the North Koreans from the nuclear program. But that's all out the window now. There seems to be my worst fear, Brian, is there's a four-way alliance in the making with a kind of division of labor, Iran, North Korea, China, and Russia, where they don't totally agree, but they agree enough that the number one enemy in the world is the United States. That's a very troubling trend.
What a difference from Trump. He's meeting with Kim Jong-un, and there's controversy with that. Fine, I got it. Meeting with him twice. And, you know, they didn't work out the deal ultimately, but they did break the ice. And now Vladimir Putin is reaffirming relations with him. He didn't like his dad, but now he needs the son, and he'll take him. So right there, they're on loose. Don't expect to get comprehensive sanctions on Iran again. Both China and Russia will stop that, right?
Yes, and something strange is happening, that the Biden administration, although it says it's tough, is somehow driving our four biggest enemies together.
Yeah.
I mean, this is the worst kind of diplomacy you can have. You don't want a coalition to form whose military and cultural and economic goal is to contain the United States. And yet that seems to be what's happening.
And it is what's happening. So let's look at what could happen. So we know, too, that people are leaning on China. Ukraine has reached out to China and say, can you stop sending weapons and supporting the war? You don't have a problem with us. We don't have a problem with you. And they said they will never send weapons, but that's just not true. They're sending dual-use material, and they are sending, to a degree, necessary tools for Russia to keep this war going.
I think that's right, and I think there's the decision by the Biden administration to keep secret what it knows about Chinese aid to Russia in the Ukraine. We know that the Biden administration, in order to head off the original Putin attack, the Biden administration released a lot of classified intelligence to warn everybody that Putin was thinking this. It didn't work, but just because Putin could read about it in the papers doesn't mean he stopped him. But in this case, they're not only driving the two together, but they're keeping secret from the American people how much the government knows about Chinese aid to the Ukraine.
Yeah, which is diabolical. And then we got Russia trying to get into our hemisphere with their rusted out Navy going into Cuba. We know that China's got a presence in South Central and South America, especially in Venezuela and Brazil. How troublesome is that?
It couldn't be more troublesome. And what it reminds me of is when I used to talk to President Trump in the Oval Office about where he wanted to go. He had a strategic picture. He liked to know which country had how much GDP, which country was penetrating our own areas better, and the overall strategic picture. I don't see when Joe Biden has press conferences or when he releases documents, I don't see that same kind of strategic approach to what is the number one problem, what do we do about it, what's the number two problem, what do we do about that. Instead, I see this general kind of happy talk coming out of the Biden administration that everything's really okay and somehow Ukraine is going to beat Russia. It's really tragic.
And then when you have a chance to talk about a path forward when it comes to peace at a summit, the president chose Hollywood stars over Switzerland, where Zelensky was holding court, right? How weird is that?
Well, it's weird because the Biden team implies that they want to win and stop Putin in Ukraine. This is their alleged goal. They say it all the time. They're very optimistic that they're somehow going to get the European Union and NATO to stop Putin. But in fact, the Putin forces are doing better. And when you add in the super cheap artillery shells and drones from North Korea, it looks to me like Putin is moving toward a winning hand in Ukraine, not a defeat at all. This is going to embarrass the Biden campaign in the final 5 weeks of the election.
Well, and it hurts the country, which is even worse. Now Israel could be going out all out war with Hezbollah, and they're complaining that we are slowing down weapons deliveries. And because Israel complained, they know Netanyahu can no longer have a White House visit when he comes here.
Isn't it strange, Brian, that the Biden administration is tougher against Israel than they are against Russia and North Korea?
Noted. It's unbelievable. Quick thing on trade. The European Union is doing something coy. They said, okay, China, if you want to build cars really cheap, why don't you build them here? Why don't you bring your manufacturing of these small electric cars, which you say are so great and efficient? Well, let's make them in Europe. Why is that an interesting proposal, one that China likely will reject?
It just shows the level of naive beliefs about China, the wishful thinking about China that our European friends still maintain. They're really hooked on China. The Mercedes-Benz BMW market now is really heavily going to for sale in China. The overall approach of the European Union has been to appease China and to use the term systemic rivalry, but it's a kind of soft term for what China is doing with its investment in Europe, which is seeking out the highest tech firms, seeking to get control over the ports in the major European nations that have ports at all. China is trying to buy and succeeding in buying control of them. So while Europe is slowly falling under the influence, if that's the right word, of China, the Europeans don't seem to be aware of it. This is, again, where Trump's face-to-face meetings with European heads of state, he warned them about China. But I don't see Joe Biden doing that. I saw the strange Biden scene watching the paratrooper come and land and then wander off. He did not seem to be alerting the G7 members to the China threat.
Which is strange. At the very least, it's strange because they're trying to get their economy going by selling to us. They need us for that. Do you think Trump has an idea how to straighten this out? Do you think he's been having enough meetings, been briefed to the point where he's up to the task?
I think President Trump wants to restore a lot of the initiatives he took in the first term. A lot of them didn't get implemented. They got started. The phase one trade deal with China, for example, President Trump called the greatest trade deal in history. In terms of the GDPs involved, it certainly was. So restarting the China trade talks, there's probably at least 10 things, maybe 20, that President Trump started, and he'd love to finish, I suspect, in the second term.
Would you play a role in that, Mike Pillsbury?
I think President Trump is a wonderful leader, and some people say he doesn't need advisors. Sometimes he says he does, but I think that pretty much this is his own work and his own ideas. And a lot of it, Brian, is found in his books. He's done 14 books, and scattered throughout them are comments about foreign policy and defense and long-term thinking. I sometimes tell the Chinese, you better read his books. And they say, we already have.
Yeah, we'll see. I'll tell you what, they like the predictability of Joe Biden, I imagine, and they might do things not to rattle anybody's cage until after the election. And so they hope Biden wins, in my view. Do you think they hope Biden wins?
I think they have their fingers crossed that Biden will win, but I've had contact with the Chinese recently. I was over there a few months ago in person in Beijing, and I try to keep up with Chinese delegations coming to town. The level of fear that Trump will win is going up. They really think Trump's going to win the election, I think.
Let's hope their intelligence is correct. And by the way, he does lean on you. The one thing he does, he asks people questions. So,
right.
Yeah, he doesn't work. You know, he has opinions, but he does ask questions. Mike Pillsbury, well, thanks. So, go ahead. Final thought.
He also listens to your show and watches you on TV. So you're one of his
right.
You know, favorite advisors and yourself.
I consider myself the president in many ways, Mike. go pick up his book if you want to know what's going to be happening next. The 100 Years Marathon, the Seas. Michael Pillsbury wrote it. He's also a senior fellow at Heritage. Michael, thank you.
Thanks, Brian.
You got
Bye-bye.
It. Hey, when we come back, it's time for you to speak up. The vice presidential stakes are heating up. It looks like J.D. Vance feels as though he has a leg up. I love J.D. I like his intellect. He's got great charisma. I worry about his foreign policy. Tim Scott doing a multimillion-dollar fundraiser with some of the most powerful CEOs in the country. I think Trump looks at that. And Doug Burgum, for many reasons, I think is right now Trump's pick. I want to see who you think he should name. You listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. I'll get to your calls in just a second. I do want to mention that at the age of 93, Willie Mays has passed away. In my lifetime, I was so young, I get it. But watching video, talking to people, he probably was the greatest player ever. What he could do, they called a five-tool player. I also remember being in grade school, and him and Hank Aaron were basically at the same threshold when it comes to the home run mark. They crossed 600 roughly together. This is all off memory. If I'm a little off, it's not by much. And then Willie just seemed to get old quicker, and he was in the National League, so he could not DH, and Hank Aaron did. Not that he wasn't a better home run hitter, but Willie could do more, and Willie stopped at 660, and Hank Aaron went on longer, and he stopped in 73 with the Mets, who got to the World Series. He had some big plays, but he obviously was not the same player. And then you look at what Hank Aaron was able to do and get up to 715 and become the new 714 and become the new home run king. End up with 755. So, of course, he would be passed by Barry Bonds. But Hank Aaron is the real home run king. But the guy that did more, can you imagine if Willie Mays didn't have to play in the cavernous Polo Grounds? Never been there, but it was the biggest ballpark, I think, in all of Major League Baseball, maybe history. No, except for the L.A. Coliseum, which the Dodgers briefly played in. And then you look in San Francisco, Candlestick Park. They say it was brutal. Wind always blowing in, never blowing out. Can you imagine what Willie would have done with two normal parks? So he passed away of age of 93, and this is a time in which they were going to salute Negro League Baseball by playing in Hickox Field, and they will do that on Fox. So it would have been great to be able to have Willie survive long enough to do that, because at 19 years old, he was playing in Negro League Baseball. That's how long ago he played, and how it's a short time ago when baseball was actually segregated like much of the South. All right, let's go to Alex listening in Brooklyn. Hey, Alex.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Thanks for taking the call. You were asking about VP picks.
Yes.
And I think that from all the possibilities that Trump has and people that he could take, I think Doug Burgum would be the best, because I think what Trump should be looking for in a VP pick is not someone that helps him gain any more votes, but someone that doesn't make him lose any more votes and doesn't attract more hatred to Donald Trump. And so I think, obviously, the people that are out, like Vivek Ramaswamy and some other extreme candidates that the Democrats are going to be able to play around with, a lot of things they've said in the past, and that would cause, you know, more people that so far haven't decided to vote for Joe Biden against Donald Trump to say, hey, he got Vivek, and Vivek said this extreme things, I'm going to vote against Donald Trump.
I don't think Vivek's a finalist, but Alex, let me tell you the positive for him, he'll actually be able to do the job. If you give him the border, he'll set up systems, make people accountable. He's done it with a number of companies. Number two, he understands politics because he's been governor. The negative part, I understand, and not from many people, conservatives, is he has a six-week abortion ban. And Trump's trying to be, it's up to the states. Well, when he had a choice, he had 6 weeks. DeSantis paid a price for that, even in the Republican primary. And I think 57% of the country wished Roe v. Wade was still in place. That's the only negative. I'm going to be going out to North Dakota next Sunday and doing a feature with him. So I'll let you know. He also knows ranching, knows what it's like to run a farm. Pretty impressive guy. Marty, listening on WDBO in Orlando, which I was on this morning. Hey, Marty.
Hey, Brian. Good morning. Hey, President Biden on immigration, all he is doing is proving the Republicans were right to oppose the Lankford negotiated bill. Because since the president signed his executive order, which was supposed to shut the border down to 2,500 a day, I see Bill Malusian reporting thousands still coming across, and the lines have not diminished or the numbers have not diminished. So whether it's his own executive order or a supposed bill that he wanted passed, he has no intention on enforcing any number or doing anything to secure our border.
No question. And Marty, I think what you're referring to is the fact that he said when it gets to 2,500, the whole thing shut down. We're way past that. And the Border Patrol doesn't even know how to do it. There's a huge bell or buzzer goes off. They made this without even checking with the Border Patrol. He went and signed this executive order last week to be a tough guy, blame Republicans for walking away from a bipartisan bill. And then yesterday, he basically gave a path to citizenship to 500,000 people, which is a green light for another 500,000 people that if you wait long enough in America, even if you come here legally, there'll be a pathway to citizenship. So it's loser, loser, loser all around. Quick note, if you're going to be in Annapolis on the 29th, Saturday night at 7 o'clock, I hope to see you at the Shelton Auditorium. Go to BrianKilmeade.com, History, Liberty, and Laughs. We're going to be on stage recreating great moments in American history in a fun, entertaining, insightful way. It's also, sadly, it's going to be one of the most patriotic events you've ever been to because there's not enough of that around, winning the war on history. I think you'll love it. Go to BrianKilmeade.com. I'll see you there or in Stroudsburg at the end of July.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show, Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. So glad you're here. Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way from Midtown Manhattan, right around the country, around the world. We're just uptown. A 13-year-old was raped by an illegal immigrant that was told to get out of this country. Shouldn't have been here to begin with. Was expelled in, 2 years ago. Still here. It was street justice that brought him to justice. And illegal immigration, probably one of the top issues in this city, as we had about 60 to 80,000 illegals here that were housing, feeding, and clothing. And that's probably the story in your city in Philadelphia, in your city in Chicago, in Los Angeles, and in San Francisco, on smaller situations like Milwaukee, where the RNC will be. We'll see that over and over again. And with the murder that happened in Maryland, that would happen thousands of miles from the border in Maryland. Every city is a border city now, and this is self-inflicted by Joe Biden. And that's one of the big stories here. Believe me, what happens at the border has become the number one story in the biggest city in the world. This hour, we're going to be joined by Ben Domenech and John Smoltz. I know one of them was a really good pitcher. I forgot which one. I have to study my guests a little bit better. And we'll be taking your calls, too, and following all the breaking news. So let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We didn't shut it down completely, but essentially major social distancing in even schools was the right thing. Initially, to close it down was correct.
I'm not talking
keeping
about
keeping it for a year was not a good idea.
So that was a mistake in retrospect. We will not repeat it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Can you believe this? Rewriting history in real time won't work this time. And that goes to you, author Anthony Fauci. Put your book and file it under fiction instead of nonfiction. And promise me, if you bought it, you will return it. Meanwhile, the truth is coming out. The Senate held a hearing on COVID-19. We'll let you know how it went.
Number two.
It's a serious question in light of the president's halting gait at times, but also in the recent wake of right-wing media selectively editing video to claim Mr. Biden wandered off.
The far right used selectively edited video to claim that Biden was wandering off like some dementia patient.
He was like a dementia patient. I don't know. I'm not a doctor, but don't tell me what I see is not to be believed. 2024. The former president relentlessly hitting battleground states while Joe keeps funds flowing behind closed doors, did it in Virginia with Bill and Hillary Clinton. We have the latest polls, game plans, and messages.
Number one.
Today I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including dreamers, who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, landed jobs in high-demand, high-skilled professions that we need to have grow to see our economy grow.
Oh, my goodness. That's Joe Biden at his smoothest. Killers coming through the border. Not a catchphrase, but a fact. You can no longer say there's no cost to breaking our border. You can't say we're a nation of immigrants. Open up your arms. Yeah, they are armed, a lot of them, with neck tattoos who want to do evil things on us because that's what they did in their country. Meanwhile, the president finds new devious ways to break our immigration system. With me right now is Ben Domenech, Fox News contributor, editor-at-large for The Spectator World, host of the Ben Domenech podcast. So, Ben, since we talked on television, Axios has a story that the people close to Joe Biden feels he could be successful against Trump, just pointing out January 6th and the danger he is to democracy. And those people who are naysayers about that policy are just knocked out of the closed circle. What do you think about that strategy?
Well, Brian, it's good to be with you. I think that's a ludicrous strategy. I think that the president is agreeing to do this debate at this juncture, not out of strength, but out of weakness. We've never had a debate this early in the modern era in this cycle. And they're still dealing with the FEC issues related to whether they can, keep Robert F. Kennedy off the stage because they haven't even actually nominated these. The president has not been renominated. Donald Trump hasn't been nominated officially. And so the fact is that, you have these presumptive nominees, quote unquote, who are supposed to be on the stage together. And the reason that you would agree to do something like this is because you're trying to right the ship. Because as much as the people came out after this most recent State of the Union, all of his sycophants in the media, and said, "Oh, this was a phenomenal speech. He's proven to the American people that he can handle everything."
It wasn't.
The fact is, it wasn't. Not only wasn't it, but you saw in the poll evidence that he actually went down after the speech and not up. And so that's a problem for this White House. They don't know how to right the ship. And they have a lot of Democrat donors who are circling now and basically saying they're seeing the same thing that you and I are seeing, that the American people are seeing about Joe Biden. And they're saying, "Hey, look, we hate Donald Trump. We want to beat him. And we're worried that Joe is declining at exactly the worst moment where we won't be able to replace him in time to actually make a difference in this upcoming election." I just don't think that there's any kind of strategy here that involves him referencing January 6th or democracy or something like that that's going to actually benefit him. Instead, he needs to lay out for the American people, "This is what I plan to do in the next 4 years," which is what a normal presidential candidate running for reelection would do. He'd say, "Things have improved. I have improved on this measure, et cetera, et cetera. Things are getting better for Americans, and this is why they're going to get even better in the next 4 years." Except he can't say that because nobody actually believes that he's going to be around for four more years. And even the people who are voting for him and advocating for him don't believe that he's going to be around for four more years. And that's why he can't say it in a debate. And that's why I think that they are going to fall back on this strategy that only, Joe Scarborough and Mika, favor, and people like that in the media. And it's going to please the nattering nabobs over at the View, but it's not going to please anybody else.
See, he goes half measures on everything. Half measures on Ukraine. We'll give them weapons, but not the right weapons. And we'll limit them when we give them the right weapons. With Israel, we want them to win until it gets tough, and then we'll abandon them, hold back weapons, and then we'll demand early peace talks with the terrorist organization and threaten to go directly to Hamas. Really? We're going to go directly to Al-Qaeda? Directly to ISIS, ISIS-K? I'm used to we don't negotiate with terrorists. As usual, tougher on allies than enemies. But now Joe Biden is also going to go after Republicans on the border. Listen to him yesterday after he rolls out this ridiculous, "If you're married to an illegal immigrant, you'll be able to stay here." Cut two.
When Republicans walked away from the deal for the most pathetic and petty of reasons, Donald Trump got on the phone literally and started in the press confirm this and calling the senator saying, don't go ahead and do this. Don't support this legislation that had bipartisan support. And he asked why. He said it would hurt him politically, and help me instead. So much for Republicans caring about the border.
So they're going to try to use that.
Brian, I have worked on policy matters for over two decades, and one of the first things that I did when I got into the Senate, when I was working for John Cornyn, the senator from Texas, was working on immigration policy, on the guest worker plan that was being advocated for at the time by George W. Bush. You know, all the debates back then obviously were about a very different population of people who wanted to go back and forth across the border, as opposed to the migrant deluge that we've seen in recent years. It was a very different circumstance. This is the most vile and evil framing I have ever heard from Joe Biden about this issue, and it's completely false. It's totally irresponsible. There are numerous critics of the plan that was being advanced there, and the simple fact is that it wasn't doing anything that the president couldn't have done himself. He made a choice to roll back the Trump era protections that we had in place that were keeping the border from seeing the kind of flow that it had seen over the course of the Biden years. And he made the choice to roll them back to enable the cartels, to enable the drug dealers, to enable the human traffickers in a way that has been completely irresponsible and has led to, you know, frankly, the incredible human misery in so many ways. People who have been negatively affected by this in ways that we won't even fully understand, I think, for years, how much damage has been done to this country, not just our security, but to the very migrants themselves. And so for him to try to take some kind of moral high ground in this, it is absolute hubris. It's disgusting. It's wrong. And I hope that former President Trump calls him out for it, because it is
in that debate.
It is judging people who care about American security as being heartless, as being people who don't actually care about what's going on, when it is he and his administration, Mayorkas and all the way down, who have contributed consistently to human misery because of the choices that they've made.
Absolutely. And remember the President Trump got a lot of criticism. He says Venezuela is emptying their prisons. They're not sending us their best at different points. Well, they are emptying their prisons. It's not in theory. And they are sending the gangsters. It's not in theory. We got a murder and a rape in the last 48 hours from people who are basically murder and rapists in their country. And they got in anyway.
This is the thing that I hate. What I hate the most about dealing with this issue is how ignorant the majority of people within the corporate legacy media are about the issues that are actually driving this. I just read, there's a 15,000 word piece in the latest edition of The New Yorker, which I read for my sins to understand what the left is thinking. And you know how many times it mentions cartels? Once. Okay, once in all of that. Okay, as opposed to actually dealing with the problems as they really exist, and the human traffickers and the cartels who are profiting from this situation, and the fact that AMLO, when he goes out, the current Mexican president, when he leaves, he will have presided over the bloodiest tenure in the modern era for the entire country of Mexico in terms of the number of murders that went on under his regime. Okay, his whole hugs, not bullets approach to dealing with the cartels. It's a complete devastation. It's a total, it's something that has completely conceded control to these cartels. And it puts Mexico on the path to being a failed state, which we simply cannot afford to have right across our southern border.
I'm endangering of ruining your day because I see how angry you are already. But remember, you talked about how he's taken advantage of some people's ignorance at the border or not knowing. It gets worse. Cut three.
We can both secure the border and provide legal pathways to citizenship. We have to acknowledge that the patience and goodwill of the American people is being tested by their fears at the border. They don't understand a lot of it. These are the fears my predecessor is trying to play on.
Okay. We don't understand a lot of it. Playing on our fears or reading the police blotter.
I mean, Joe Biden has been to the border twice. twice. So, I mean, you know, come on. Here's what I'd love. I'd love for Joe Biden to do a ride-along with our colleague Bill Malugin.
Yep.
Like, just hang out with him for a week, okay, and then come and make these arguments to us. He doesn't even care to understand the issue. He doesn't care about it in any frame other than what he has to do to navigate how mad progressives are for him installing any kind of thing that can be compared to the Trump policy. However, you know, how mad people are with, you know, NPR tote bags who are coming after him on it, and versus the people who are on the other side, you know, including a lot of, frankly, members of his own party, moderates and centrists in his own party and coalition, who have said that, you know, this is unacceptable. We can't have this. You know, we have crime and we have drugs and we have all these things coming into our cities. You know, it's unacceptable and it's hurting us. And I think that, you know, unfortunately, this is what we've gotten out of this Joe Biden presidency. All he cares about is power. He doesn't actually care about the country. And it's really it's a horrible thing to see. And I hope that people understand this won't be solved just by, you know, reelecting Donald Trump. It's going to take time. It's going to take effort. And it's going to be a sustained problem for us in terms of navigating everything that comes after. We're not going to be able to, you know, deport people overnight. We're not going to be able to deal with this, you know, in an immediate. It's going to take some time.
So,
but we have got to do this in order to protect our country and our people.
And 62% of the public back him on that, rounding up illegals, overstaying their visas and sending them back. So and they'll implement it, have the right people. They won't have the same problem if they win. They won't have the same problem they had last time. I think every position is capable of being filled, and people have already been screened if you go use the Heritage Foundation and what they've done. And I'm not sure Trump's going to sign off on it, but it's a heck of a start. So, lastly, when it comes to foreign policy, I can't imagine a bigger disaster. You now have Russia going to visit North Korea, who's established a relationship with Iran and fortified their relationships with China. And I'm looking at Morning Joe, a clip, and I'm like, oh, John Meacham, he's always so smart. He did the Bush, you know, and he was very, very helpful to me with some of my books, but doesn't speak to me now, I don't think. And I'm watching this. They are blaming Trump. I go, wait a second. I'm blaming Trump. They're like, Trump loves dictators, and now we have two dictators meeting today. This is why we can't elect Trump. Are you people out of your mind? Trump has nothing to do with that. How could you blame Trump for this?
That's absolutely absurd. And look, you know, John Meacham has written some good things in the past, but I think he's, you know, unfortunately suffering from some severe TDS and has been for some time. But look, you know, the truth is that these dictators understand power, and they understand threats. They understand game theory, and they understood when Donald Trump was in charge that when he made certain threats and moves and suggestions that about things that he would do, that they had to take that seriously because he might actually do them. You know, I have a piece that just came out, you know, at the Spectator. People can check it out at thespectator.com. My profile of Tony Blinken, who has been obviously, you know, Biden's right hand on foreign policy for many years, and he has been actively undermining American interests in so many different ways for so long, and it's completely incoherent. And if you listen to our allies, they will say it's incoherent. It's schizophrenic, and it's because, again, it's driven by America's domestic political situation on the far left, where they're scared of these progressives. They're scared of the people who are going to be protesting in the streets of Chicago this summer, and that's something that is unfortunately leading us in the completely wrong direction. And it certainly is not something that leads to any kind of confidence from America's allies around the world, which is what we need at this juncture.
Ben Domenech has had just about enough of me. He had me on Fox and Friends, and I just got him all ticked off here.
I can throw a knuckleball. I'm not that great of a pitcher, but I can throw a knuckleball.
Yes, you can.
It's a good skill to have.
I mean, it's just a lot of intensity with this election. It's going to be so interesting to see this debate, and I'll talk to you afterwards and probably before, Ben. Thanks so much.
Great to be with you.
All right. If you're not angry enough, Anthony Fauci says, I was never for shutting schools down. Back in a moment.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
That right now, we have to start implementing both containment and mitigation.
And what was done when you do closing the school is mitigation.
If you have a situation in which you don't have a real good control over an outbreak and you allow children to gather together, they likely will get infected. And if they get infected, the likelihood that they will bring the infection home.
So he says on his book tour, yeah, we should not keep the schools closed. Initially keep the schools closed, but we should open up. Not one word did he use. He didn't use his star power, his leverage to open them up. Yeah, teachers' unions wanted to keep it closed. They are the villains in this situation. They are saying that we're not going to open up. The kids are fine on Zoom. They weren't. They're still deficient in so many ways, but not just in America, but mostly in America and around the world. If Anthony Fauci had stood up and said, there's always a risk, But the kids are not really at risk. If you're a teacher going through and you have some type of cancer treatment, you have an illness, we'll keep you out of harm's way. We'll make sure you're paid. That's my recommendation. But I want these kids back in school because staying home is not going to help either. But now we're saying they should have been back in school. But I remember every day that you kept them out. And do not let Anthony Fauci get away with this. And if you have somebody in your life that likes Anthony Fauci, let them hear that second tape. The second tape shows that he wanted to keep those schools closed, and the 6 feet apart kept them closed, and there was no reason for it.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
We're going to welcome back everybody. We're going to be speaking with John Smoltz, Hall of Fame pitcher, fantastic baseball announcer over with Fox. We've got the All-Star game coming up July 10th to the 14th. There's going to be an All-Star game. It's going to be at Hickox Field, the oldest stadium in the country. And John Smoltz, also a great golfer. Yesterday we spoke to Tim Brown of the Raiders, Bucks, and Notre Dame Heisman Trophy winner. A lot of these great athletes in their 40s, they can continue to play golf in the 40s and 50s, and they're doing just that. We'll talk about that. Also, the passing of Willie Mays at the age of 93. A lot of people remember that. I remember the tail end of his career as a big Met fan. We hoped that he could turn back the clock when the Giants let him end his career in New York. Unfortunately, the Mets would lose the World Series in 6 games to the Athletics. But he would be a staple with them, and 24 would be retired. Just a quick thing. When we left off, I was playing a little Anthony Fauci. He's doing his book tour trying to talk about all the things we mention in real time. Why are schools closed? If kids aren't vulnerable, if there's no deaths with kids unless they had a pre-existing condition, why are the schools shut down? Now he's saying the schools are shut down as if we didn't tape him saying the schools were not shut down. I want you to hear what was also going on simultaneously with Anthony Fauci's interviews was an actual hearing as people were talking about what was really going on with COVID-19 and what have we learned from then. Here's Senator Josh Hawley as he was talking to Robert F. Gary, a PhD professor and associate dean of School of Medicine at Tulane. Listen.
Stand by your assertion and your nature piece that SARS-CoV-2 is not a laboratory construct? Could not be.
We do, and that's exactly the same conclusion that the intelligence community came to.
Oh, no, that is a lie. Let's stop right there. Well, that right is a lie. Multiple intelligence community agents and components have concluded it was likely a lab leak, and they concluded that at the same time that you and your people were propagandizing the American public.
You know, all we did was write a paper, Nature Medicine, and 3,000 words. It's been one of the most scrutinized papers in history. It's held up very well. It wasn't an attempt to distort things and to mislead the American public. It was just simply a paper.
And everyone kept referring back to it and said it couldn't be a lab leak. And what he was talking about, and Josh Hawley's 100% right. You know who has not? The FBI says it was likely a lab leak. The CIA hasn't signed off on it. They said they're noncommittal on it. And the main reason why we don't know for sure it came from a lab, even though even people like John Stewart have said, I don't know, the place where the Wuhan lab is located, exact type of virus that they were studying, ends up poisoning the world. I don't know. You tell me. Dr. Stephen Quay is somebody else, the chief executive officer and former faculty Stanford University School of Medicine member. He was talking with Senator Roger Marshall. Cut 28.
I mean, that's the cardinal sins of gain-of-function research. What purpose would there be if you're wanting to develop vaccines? Is there any civilian purpose, or is this, in fact, a bioweapon?
I can't say it's a bioweapon because that's in the mind of the person that made it. But it is a highly unusual, highly synthetic. They were doing synthetic biology around it. And its two functions are quite remarkable with respect to what kind of research you would do in the civilian world.
Hmm. So, I don't know. He's pretty qualified, too. Stanford's a pretty good school. He's had a lot of respect. He's not buying on to it either. And by the way, he was talking to a doctor in Roger Marshall. I want you to hear from Dr. Richard Ebright. He was talking to Roger Marshall, too, and he's interesting because he's the Board of Governors Professor of Chemistry and Chemical Biology and Laboratory Director at the Werksman Institute of Microbiology at Rutgers, another school that would not accept me, and I would glad not to go because I couldn't handle it. But this guy can. Listen, cut 29.
Dr. Ebert, is there a possibility that it could have been a dual purpose, that it could have been used as a bioweapon?
The original SARS virus, SARS-CoV-1,
yeah,
is a Tier 1 select agent in the United States. So it is in the group of pathogens and biological toxins that our federal government has identified as having high potential for use as a bioweapon in biowarfare, bioterrorism, or biocrime. It, by definition, therefore, according to our federal government, is a bioweapon agent. It is not a bioweapon, but it is an agent that potentially could be used.
Hmm. So these are people that have their minds open, can tell you about the possibility, use them as resources. But instead, you had Dr. Anthony Fauci writing policy, who's chief advisor for over 20 years, said that they had a back channel and they knew how to go around the system. They also knew how not to be victims of, that they call it, of being a Freedom of Information Act request. So there's just so many questions, and it really hurts that some people are still trying to cover it up. Some people make honest mistakes. Well, this is what I thought, and this is what it is. Let's learn from it. You have another guy who tries to pretend as if he never said something we have on the record of doing. Well, let's switch gears for a second, have some fun, talk some baseball. One of the elite analysts in the game today, Hall of Fame pitcher with the Red Sox and Braves, John Smoltz joins us now. John, welcome back.
Good morning. I'm doing great.
Well, let me ask some. How pumped are you for this tournament, the American Century Championship? I remember it was like yesterday. It was last year where you told me you learned to relax a little bit more, maybe turn down the intensity. Is that as well as you were playing, you feel you could have played better? How do you feel about approaching this one?
Well, I went in last year with one new hip thinking I could buy time on the other one. And right after the tournament, I got my second hip done. So I'm going to be playing this tournament with two brand new hips, and I'm playing as good as I've ever played. Problem is, the tournament's not now, so I got to keep that for about 2.5 weeks for now.
July 10th to the 14th, the American Century Championship. It's going to be in Edgewood Tahoe Golf Course over in Highwood 50, and we were talking to Tim Brown yesterday. You got about $600,000. It's in that 54-hole tournament that's going to go to great charities. Let me ask you something. I don't know what this is like. My brother got two new hips, too. He played soccer too long. And do you have to readjust your swing? Do you feel different?
It's life-changing. I put it off as long as I could. I probably waited 5 years too long. But the hip doctor said, as long as I can't sleep, then that's when you do it. And I couldn't sleep. And it was the greatest thing I've ever done. The golf game needs the hips, needs the freedom. But more importantly, walking. I can walk 10 miles now. It doesn't matter. I couldn't walk more than 3 hours in any golf tournament I ever played. So for me, that's the biggest thing.
Was this just wear and tear, or is this something running your family?
A little bit of both. Runs in the family. And then when I retired, I played 10 years of basketball, highly competitive basketball. So I'm a competitive junkie. And, you know, my whole career I ran to stay in shape for pitching, but it really is a combination of the amount of golf, the amount of basketball and baseball, and then, of course, genetics.
All right, so we'll make sure to tune to that. It's broadcast by NBC Sports, and we'll catch up with it, and I'm sure you'll be in the leaderboard, atop the leaderboard the entire time. And hopefully for your to christen your new hips, you'll get a victory. But let's talk – there's so many things to talk about. Number one, different sports but same mindset. When you become a broadcaster, after having the adrenaline of coming out of the bullpen for the Red Sox or starting for the Braves, how different is it getting into the booth? The light goes on. John, tell us what you think. Set this game up. And how is that going to, what advice would you have for Tom Brady, who's going to be making that transition this year with your company, Fox Sports?
I think the biggest thing is you don't ever realize the camera's on. That's the best advice. And then you just try to give people things they could possibly never know. Anything that anybody can look up, it's wasting your time. You know, you got to give stats, but you've got to give knowledge to some things that nobody could ever know. And that's what Tom Brady will be able to do in the game of football. Nobody did it better. And that's kind of what I've tried to do. And the game of baseball is a little different. It's a marathon. There's so many things that may look easy on TV that I try to explain that are not. And I really try to give that fresh perspective of something that the game's hard. I failed a lot. I'm not afraid of making fun of myself, and I'm not afraid to learn. So those are the biggest keys.
How much is it opening up the book and just studying and knowing these teams?
There's a lot of studying. When I broke in, you didn't have to study as much. You knew everybody. But as time and as the game has evolved, I spend about 3 to 5 hours on game day just looking at numbers and statistics and video and trying to catch up with the team that I'm currently doing.
That's big news. When he gets into the booth, I thought he did good. He was at the UFL game over the weekend. He seems like a natural. Big surprise. Word is he's studying like crazy. But the big news when I got up to today is somebody, I was young when he came back to the Mets, were number 24. They lost 6 games in the World Series to the Athletics, and it was his swan song. Here is Willie Mays, who passed away at the age of 93. Here's a little of his Hall of Fame speech, cut 37.
In bed last night, I said to myself, how can I write a speech? And I came up with one saying, how can you put it on paper? That's my theme. You cannot do it. I arrived in New York City on a Friday at 4 o'clock, scared to death with 3 bats in my little briefcase, my glove. I didn't have a uniform. I didn't have a hat. Leo said to me, son, as long as I'm manager, you are my son of Philly. You do not have to hit. Just go out and catch the ball. And from those words, from Leo DeRocha, I think, gave me a little courage. And I went on from there.
He was beloved. And that real personality is part of it. Did you have a chance to meet him?
You know, I didn't get a chance to meet him and spend too much time with him. He's the one of the greatest. We're going to honor him tomorrow at Rookwood, the game at Rookwood on Fox. And, you know, it transcends so much in life what he was able to do, how he did it, and the legacy will live forever. It's one of the few people where you know for the rest of time you will know about Willie Mays.
It's hard to believe he was in Negro Leagues when he was brought up to the Mets. I mean, that's how far back he goes.
For sure. And I think the thing that people don't realize, it really should have been him instead of Jackie Robinson. But the Dodgers sent a scout, and the scout said he can't hit the curveball. 17-year-old kid couldn't hit the curveball. So they went in another direction. The Giants went and saw him and said, he's the best player we've ever seen. Back up the truck. So he got $250 a month, I think, as a salary and a $4,000 signing bonus.
And he got it. And just think about this, John. Did you pitch in Candlestick, right?
Yes.
How hard is it? Think about how many more home runs he would have had he not had that as his home park or the Polo Grounds, which they say was cavernous.
That's exactly right. He probably lost at least 50 or more home runs than he had over 600. He had 660.
Here's what Mickey Mantle said, cut 38.
Well, I only played one game against Willie's, the guy that hit the ball that caused all my trouble. He hit a pop fly to right center.
I thought you were playing center field.
I was playing right field.
DiMaggio.
He stepped in the hole. That's how come I hurt my leg. I didn't want to run into him, you know. I mean, you don't run into Joe DiMaggio, you know. And so I tried to stop real quick, and I stepped on that thing, and it caused all my problems.
Just hard to believe you had him, Mickey Mantle, and Duke Snider, all in New York. There was no West Coast baseball.
Totally amazing. I mean, when you think about everything that he went through and everything he did for the sport, for the city of Birmingham, it's truly, I can't wait to go call this game. It's going to be one of the coolest moments of my career.
I know. I thought Iowa was great. This will probably be better. It's an Negro League Park, the oldest park in the country. You told me 2 weeks ago when I saw you that you believe the Yankees are for real. And so are the Orioles. They played last night. And this is the moment Yankee fans are worried about. Let's listen to Aaron Judge at the plate.
Ooh.
Judge gets hit.
Let's see where it got him.
Yeah. Yankee Universe collectively holding their breath right now.
He got him to chase the fastball in earlier in the count, and he tried to go back in there, and this one just took off too much, and he's squeezing that left hand.
I did not see the game, John, but the Yankees went on to win 4-2. They're trying to establish themselves in the division. So I think they only had a 2.5 game lead going in. But your thought about hitting maybe the one of the premier players in the game, do you think you're trying to message to the rest of the team, and is it worth it if it was intentional?
I don't think it was intentional at all. These are the moments, unfortunately, in baseball that stink. Players are facing velocity they've never faced before. They're getting hit a lot, mainly because some pitchers cannot command, and they don't know how to get out of the way. That was an unfortunate. Their hands are over the plate, so they're trying to get to the fastball, and their hands are in play more than they've ever been in the game, and you're seeing more of this happening. You try never to throw a fastball above the shoulders, ever. This one was to a 6'8 guy up and in, trying to get him off the plate, and it hit him in the worst spot. So it's frustrating. It's something that you emotionally can't comprehend in the moment. But hopefully it's not that bad.
Sports Radio was talking today about the Yankees have to send a message with Gerrit Cole today. I kind of hope not. I don't really need to see bench-killing brawls and messages, but you tell me, what is the law of the jungle in this?
You know, that's the problem when you don't have clarity to what's going on. When emotions take over, then you're going to do something more than likely that's not right. In our day, it was managed totally differently. But you're talking about velocities and career-ending scenarios. So I don't think anything will happen. And that doesn't mean down the road something might not happen.
Gotcha. John Smoltz, thanks for your time. Look forward to the game tomorrow. And I look forward to the results of your golf tournament in July. Thanks, John Smoltz.
My pleasure.
You got it. When we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls, do some analysis, give you the latest news that's breaking while we were speaking. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everybody. So Bill Maher had a podcast, and Larry Wilmore on, who used to have a show after on the Comedy Channel, sometimes fill in for Jon Stewart on The Daily Show, used to do that once in a while. It was short-lived, but he's known more as a writer-producer. So he sat down with Bill Maher, and he had the same reaction to Joe Biden's insulting Morehouse speech that I had. And it's like, why are you pandering to an elite black audience and letting them know they're less than and their chance in America was not great for success? Listen.
What'd you think of Biden's speech at Moorhead? Me too.
I didn't like it.
I loved Andrew Sullivan's column, as I always.
I love Andrew Sullivan.
Yes. And I thought he had it right. First of all, he quoted Obama speaking at the same college.
He got it. I remember Obama.
Like 10 years earlier.
Yeah.
And it was night and day.
Yeah.
Obama's was all about, you know, so many doors have been broken down. You have so many good reasons to hope and no more excuses. And went over way better. Of course, obviously, it's a different standard he's working from as a black man speaking at that college. But Biden's was just so, like, I thought, 2000 late.
It's condescending. This is the
condescending.
I couldn't.
Larry Wilmore and Bill Maher just said that. And I did not realize that about Barack Obama. But like he said, like I always said, his biography was a lot stronger. He never used it, Barack Obama. You know, to a guy that could have been in a rich law firm instead of walking over the tundras from black church to black church to establish himself as a politician and take a huge pay cut to do it. That was, and losing losing his first race.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So glad you're here. Mike Rogers will be with you shortly. We're looking at a lot of breaking news, including the arraignment of this rapist, I guess you could say suspected rapist, but who took a 13-year-old right here in New York into a park and her boy and her friend, tied them up and then raped her. They got the description, and New Yorkers waited outside a bodega he liked to go to. They identified him, and they did some street justice, beat him up a little bit, then called the cops. I hope they all get their $10,000. We're watching the arraignment's going to be starting shortly. We'll keep you up with that. This goes to show you, not only are they not sending us their best, they're sending us their worst. Let's get to the big three.
Now, with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
We didn't shut it down completely, but essentially major social distancing in even schools was the right thing. Initially, to close it down was correct.
I'm not talking
keeping
about initially.
It for a year was not a good idea.
So that was a mistake in retrospect. We will not repeat it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Do you believe this? Rewriting government history in real time won't work for Anthony Fauci. He's got a book out. It should be a fictional book. He's trying to save his reputation. To me, it's sullied forever. Meanwhile, the Senate has substantive hearings about COVID-19 yesterday. We'll let you hear some of it.
Number two.
It's a serious question in light of the president's halting gait at times, but also in the recent wake of right-wing media selectively editing video to claim Mr. Biden wandered off.
The far right used selectively edited video to claim that Biden was wandering off like some dementia patient.
Yeah, the far right. That's right. 2024, the former president relentlessly hitting background states while Joe keeps funds flowing behind closed doors. And the allegations continue that Joe Biden is not wandering off. He is speaking well. Him freezing in front of within a Juneteenth event is totally natural. It's the right wing that's spinning it. Right.
Number one.
Today I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including dreamers who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, landed jobs in high demand, high skilled professions that we need to have grow, to see our economy grow.
Yeah, nice. Well put. Killers coming across the border, not a catchphrase, but a fact. You can no longer say there's no cost to breaking our border, Joe. Meanwhile, he finds new devious ways to break our immigration system. Now, he says if you are married with someone and for 10 years, you came here illegally, you now have a path to stay here safely and a pathway to citizenship. That's going to be challenged in the courts. It sounds ultimately unconstitutional. Of course, sounds like a total political ploy. Mike Rogers wants to be the next senator from Michigan. He's fighting it out to get the nomination for the Republicans. Mike, welcome back.
Brian, always good to be back.
Yeah, so let's talk about the 500,000 people minimum that are now going to be safe to stay and maybe eventually have a pathway to citizenship. Can you do that through executive order?
I don't believe so. You know, there's a law in the books that says, hey, if you were to go back as one of those dreamers to your home country and apply, even though you were married to a citizen, you'd go through the process and come back and you'd be perfectly legal. But the people that you're talking about chose not to do that. So my argument is now you're doubling down. They broke the law to get here, then they just broke the law again, and what you're rewarding them with is this quick pathway to parole. It's just sending the wrong signal when you know that we have these criminal elements who are coming across the border without being stopped. We know that drugs coming across the border without being stopped. I mean, think of this, Brian. Methamphetamine in Michigan, they used to have these meth labs that you'd see in the paper about every 2 weeks. They'd be raiding, the police would be raiding a meth lab somewhere in rural Michigan.
Yeah.
We haven't seen that in a couple of years. And the reason, the meth that's coming across the southern border and coming directly to states like Michigan and every other state is so cheap. It's easier just to buy it and resell it for the drug dealers here. So they're not making it here anymore because it's so cheap, because the border's so open, because they can get it here so easy. This is a huge problem. And when the president does something like this, he's just tone deaf. Absolutely.
Is how he wants to do everything halfway. Yeah, Afghanistan. Well, the deal was in place. I had to pull out. Nothing's ever going to happen. The Taliban won't fall. It all falls as a disaster. Israel will support you until things get tough. We'll abandon you. Hey, Ukraine, you want some weapons? We'll give them to you, but you just can't hit certain places. We're not going to give you exactly what you need. Eventually we will, but just not right away. It's halfway on everything. Here's Joe Biden describing what he wants to do and what he proposed yesterday, and he signed it in an executive order. Cut one.
Today I'm announcing new measures to clarify and speed up work visas to help people, including dreamers who have graduated from U.S. colleges and universities, land in jobs in high-demand, high-skilled professions that we need to have grow to see our economy grow. I want those who have been educated at U.S. colleges and universities to put their skills and knowledge to work for here in America. I want to keep building the strongest economy in the world with the best workforce in the world.
So this is not going to help.
What did he say? I'm sorry.
I have no idea. Yeah. I mean, he's all over the place. And then 2 weeks ago, he had executive orders because Republicans wouldn't pass the bipartisan bill. Did you have a problem with the bipartisan bill, by the way?
On immigration, absolutely. I mean, it codified illegal immigration at a certain level across the state, and they had no they also did one other really important thing people need to understand. They codified that if you just filled out this app, you could get in on a worker's app, but they had no way to verify it. So what you were doing is putting in place a permanent way for drug cartels to make a lot more money. Oh, and by the way, people who were not properly vetted to get into the country. I thought that, listen, this ought to be about security first and foremost. I mean, you think about people being raped in parks. We had minors here sexually assaulted in Michigan by illegal immigrants. We had an illegal immigrant murder a young woman, Ruby Garcia, in Grand Rapids. We have criminal gangs operating in Southeast Michigan, all illegals. Matter of fact, their newest thing was just high-end retail theft, and they're doing high-end home invasions. This you can't ask the average citizen who is playing by the rules and paying their taxes to try to deal with this illegal immigrant crime wave that's coming across America. It's not fair, number one. And number two, it's just wrong, and it's dangerous, and why should we do that? And that doesn't even count the number of terrorists on the watch list that we know or don't know that got here. All of that is a problem. And by the way, on Afghanistan, I don't know if you saw this, Brian, the ISIS-K folks are now advertising for foreign fighters to come and get trained to do terrorist activities against the West. Remember they said, oh, that's done. That's not going to happen. The Taliban will help us. Taliban won't tell women they can't go back to school. Guess what? Women can't go back to school. Now it's becoming a safe haven again for terrorism. Right under our noses. And that is thank you to Joe Biden.
And look, think about all the intelligence we lost, Mike Rogers, not being there. How much we don't know about ISIS-K, what we don't know about Hezbollah, what they were doing in Syria, what we don't have with their intelligence sources totally cut off. I was talking to some of the retired guys from Operation Pineapple. They kept their lines open with people. But you know who didn't? The CIA. The CIA cut and ran. We're done. They were told, don't worry about Afghanistan anymore. So we're willingly blind to what's happening. The retired guys who gave a lot of their lives and livelihoods over there, they're not willing to do that because they know how bad it is. And I would not doubt that some of our material ended up in the hands of Hamas that perpetrated October 7th. I think that story is going to emerge soon.
Well, you know what? Guess the number one seller of military equipment on the market is today, Afghanistan. And guess whose equipment it is? Ours.
Yeah.
Think of that. They're making cash profit from the money we left. Some $85 billion is a figure I saw. I don't know if that's accurate, but even if it's wrong by half, my God, $25 billion. I mean, that is a lot of equipment. And this is all done by – it was a forced error by Joe Biden because he packed up and ran in the middle of the night. 2 years prior, no U.S. personnel killed. When he decided to pack up and run, we lost 13 very brave Americans who gave their lives that day on the chaos that they created. Didn't have to happen. And right. As you said, remember what they were asking for. They weren't asking for thousands and thousands of troops, our U.S. military officers and our counterterrorist troops. They were asking for 2,500 people to make sure exactly what's happening now didn't happen. And we had the ability to reach out and touch someone in real time so they don't have a chance to recruit, to train, to finance, to plan an operation that kills Americans or Europeans or any other allies around the world. That's all they were asking for. And what he said is, nope, absolutely not. We trust this terrorist organization that's now in charge, the Taliban. I mean, we could go down a list after list after list of just critical mistakes, including, by the way, the one wasn't on your list. When we went into Saudi Arabia and said, we're going to stop your ability to go after the Houthi rebels because we just don't think that's right. Oh, and by the way, we're taking the Houthi rebels off of the terrorist list. And guess who our ships now are engaged in combat with?
Houthi rebels.
With the, yes, absolutely. I mean, these guys are a disaster for our safety and security.
So I was just looking at this, and I said this last hour. The North Korea is now affirming their relationship with Russia, Russia with North Korea. They have. We know that there's no limits relationship with China and Russia. And now Iran and Russia are now forming this axis literally of evil with these four. And it, the MSNBC is actually saying how bad this would be if Donald Trump was president because he likes dictators. Excuse me? This president formed an enemies list and got them together through his policies. How dare you blame Trump? If Trump was in office right now, they wouldn't even be talking about Russia or Vladimir Putin. All they'd be talking about is how Trump turned the whole world against us. We're watching the most experienced president on foreign policy that every turn throw us in the street and diminish us even more. And I just find that unbelievable. I have John Meacham, somebody who's an esteemed historian, talk about the dangers of Trump because of North Korea getting together with Russia. My head is spinning.
And by the way, you're so completely right. I mean, I better, you know, your blood pressure could go up over that kind of thinking. The very fact, the way that Biden is trying to supply and fight the war in Ukraine provided ample opportunity to the rest of the world to lose respect. I mean, they wanted weapons. They sent them blankets. They wanted aircraft. They said, can't do that, but we'll send you rifles. I mean, they have screwed this thing up from the very beginning, and they have shoved Vladimir Putin into the hands of Kim Jong-un. And I'll tell you, this is so dangerous because it now you now have this black market economy that's going to creep up in the world beyond sanctions, where the Chinese are involved, the Russians are involved, now the North Koreans are involved. And that means North Korea will ramp up production of weapons, get it to Russia. Iran just loves the fact that these guys are doing bad things and don't like the West. I mean, they are creating an environment in the world that makes us a lot less safe, and it's dangerous. And I've never seen kind of this threat matrix, Brian, in all the time I've been doing national security work, as dangerous as it is today. And that's because the people who matter don't respect us, like Russia, like China, like North Korea. And that was not the case under the first 4 years of Donald Trump.
Mike Rogers with us now, wants to be the next senator for Michigan. So the former president went to Detroit over the weekend, and he sat down there in a black church, in an event of mostly African-Americans, and Lorenzo Sewell said this to him.
President Trump, I'm so humbled that you would be here. President Obama never came to the hood, so to speak, right? President Joe Biden, he went to the big NAACP dinner, but he never came to the hood. So thank you.
It was pretty much they appreciated. I don't know if one person's going to vote for Trump, but the fact that he's trying, going into settings where he gets 15% of the vote, like the South Bronx, going and having a rally there. Can you tell me how that was received before and after?
Oh, absolutely. I was there, and I met a lot of the small – there were some small business black small business owners in Detroit. One guy was – this is a really great story – who said, listen, I was incarcerated as a young man. I got out. I thought I got to do something. He started a donut shop. This donut shop, over the last 3 years, his input costs tripled. He said, I had to close it in April because nobody's going to pay $3 in my neighborhood. And it's an independent donut shop for, you know, $3 for a donut. I said, well, then, you know, why are you here? He said, I'll tell you why I'm here. Because when Republicans were here, I had a chance. And my pricing, I had a chance to make my life better. I don't want a handout. I want to be part of upward mobility. And he goes, it was when I had to close my business, I realized I'm a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a Republican. I heard that theme throughout the day with people who came there and said,
yeah,
I am tired of being taken advantage of. I don't want you to give me something. I want you to allow me to start businesses and be, have a black community that has black leadership and black entrepreneurs. And so, I mean, it was a really powerful day. And I'll tell you how it works. The Democrats came out and attacked it, you know, for 3 days afterward. And that tells me exactly It was the right thing to do with the right message. And people are tired of the Democrat, you know, just do what I tell you to do and everything will just work out fine.
So let me ask you, Mike Rogers, they say there was a mostly white audience. Is that true?
No. I don't know. Who told them? I don't know where they
That's
got
what
that.
CNN was reporting.
No, my gosh.
And MSNBC. Well,
that's unfortunate. I was in the crowd. I did not. It was not a majority white crowd. Were there white people there? Absolutely. You know, Detroit is probably about 15% white as well. And, you know, Trump had supporters from all over. But I'm going to guess the majority of that crowd. I'm not going to guess. The majority of that crowd was black. And they were there because they wanted to be there. And they were there because they've been told the wrong things about their values. Mm-hmm. You know, the biggest applause line got everybody on their feet that day was when the president started talking about radical gender ideology and having, you know, black white biological men competing with women on women's sport. Place went nuts.
Yeah.
Because they know that doesn't line with their values. And the Democrats are so out of step with people who are struggling to pay bills in that city, who are hope to have some sense of values for their kids and their schools that are just absolute failures. They're looking for someone who's going to come in and, again, not hand them a check, but give them the opportunity to get, you know, to stand
right.
up.
Gotcha.
I was very motivated by this, and we had lots of conversations. I now I'm taking rap lessons. Not really. But the guy named Icewear Vizzo, who I think he did a Fox thing after that.
Yeah.
I had a long conversation with him. He went through the same transformation about, you know, engagement in law enforcement, got out, knew that wasn't going
to
work.
Mike, I'm going to have to leave it there, but great conversation, great insight. Best of luck becoming the next senator from Michigan.
Hey, thanks, Brian.
All right, and help out Mike Rogers. Will you listen to the Brian Kilmeade Show?
It's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Thanks to all the members of Congress and Homeland Security Secretary. I'm not sure I'm going to introduce you all the way.
Right. I'm not sure I'm going to introduce you all the way. That makes perfect sense. He sat there with a ridiculous immigration axiom that allows 530,000 people minimum who came here illegally to stay if they've been with a spouse for 10 years and not have to go back. And then he makes the announcement and he credits the Homeland Security Secretary, but he's not going to introduce him all the way. Look, we all forget names. I forget a lot names. And no one says I'm not in my prime except for Eric and Pete and Allison, who I work with every day. But having said that, this is 2 days after the KJP and everybody else on the left accuses Republicans of mistakenly mocking and doing fake outs when it comes to his failings. His freezings twice, his wanderings, his meanderings. That's right-wing media. What was that, by the way? Did I manipulate that tape? Oh, is Donald Trump just as bad? 90 minutes? You might find a faux pas. This guy hasn't spoken 90 minutes in 2 years. To the public, anyway. He might do something behind closed doors, but I sense he just naps. Rich Salgado, coming up soon.
Sure, I'm going to pronounce it right.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. A lot of compelling testimony yesterday on Capitol Hill. I was able to watch a lot of it back. Hard to watch it live in the middle of the day, even for me, who does most of his work before 9 o'clock. I mean, most of my time is between 3 and 6 a.m., and then you're studying on the fly. You do the morning show, and you do this show. But I was really brought in and sucked into these Boeing hearings. Why? Because there's Airbus and Boeing. That's it. We have no choice. There's no competition. It's nobody's fault. No one could emerge after Boeing. And they always just were synonymous with excellence. And over the last 3 years, they've been anything but. And even though they finally got their rocket into space. So the CEO, Dave Calhoun, went to Capitol Hill. Here's what gets me. The guy made $32 million last year. And gave himself a $4 million reward for great work. Meanwhile, fortunes and respect and security when it comes to Boeing has never been lower. Listen to some of the clashes with Senator Josh Hawley. As we know, people have died, planes have crashed because of manufacturing malfunctions, bad systems, workers, uninspired whistleblowers who are being punished. Just a sick situation. Here's Josh Hawley and the CEO of Boeing. Cut 33.
But meanwhile, you're getting paid a heck of a lot of money. It's unbelievable. If anybody's come out of this deal good, it's you. Why haven't you resigned?
Senator, I'm sticking this through. I'm proud of having taken the job. I'm proud of our
safety record.
And I am
proud
of our Boeing people.
You're proud of this safety record.
I am proud of every action we have taken.
Every action you've
taken? Yes, sir.
Wow. Wow. There's some news for you. Well, behind you, you can't see it. Behind you, the folks are showing pictures of the people who are the victims of your safety record. I think we can all see them. And I think the American public, when they fear to get on their airplanes, they understand your safety record. And frankly, sir, I think it's a travesty that you're still in your job.
Well, number one, they also point out, too, that a lot of people don't want to do manufacturing jobs. Not an excuse, but they need manufacturing jobs. And it's hard to get Americans to do it. Here's more of this clash. Cut 35.
I don't think the problem's with the employees.
Oh, it's
actually
not. It is
no,
not.
I think the problem's with you. You. It's the C-suite. It's the management. It's what you've done to this company. That's where the problem is. The problem's at the top. Your engineers, they're probably the best in the world. Your machinists, they're outstanding. You're the problem. And I just hope to God that you don't destroy this company before it can be saved.
That was Josh Hawley. He's on his game. Senator Blumenthal was just as direct. It's very rare when both sides are teeing off. They're really upset. It's as if Boeing was out there and they did turn around and face the surviving families who lost their loved ones because a screw was loose or a plane wasn't ready or was malfunctioned. And he addressed them almost like Zuckerberg did with those people who they say social media led their kids to suicide to some degree. The other big hearing was on Capitol Hill trying to get to the bottom of COVID-19. Some people really dug in and some people are trying to heal their reputation. First off, to Anthony Fauci, and we mentioned this. I put it in my cold open, my big three. Here he is trying to rewrite history. Cut 23.
The issue is shutting down everything immediately, and we didn't shut it down completely, but essentially major social distancing in even schools was the right thing. How long you kept it was the problem, because there was a disparity throughout the country. I kept on saying, close the bars, open the schools. Open the schools as quickly and as safely as you possibly can. But initially, to close it down was correct.
I'm not talking
keeping
about initially.
It for a year was not a good idea.
So that was a mistake in retrospect. We will not repeat it.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you heard this show. You see it on television. I know how you feel about it. Anthony Fauci misled so many people. He would do rules by interview, depending on who he was talking to. But most of all, kids can't go back to school because it's dangerous to the teacher. Well, there are kids that are dying. We got to be sure about this. They can learn COVID. It's good to be safe. Now he's saying, we used to say, but there's a downside. Kids aren't learning. They're not interacting. They're walking around with masks on. They don't even know what their teacher looks like. You take a second grader, you tell them to put on a hospital mask. No wonder he was wearing it as a chin strap. And then you realize you don't even need it. Then they had us wearing it outside. This guy was nuts. Then he had two masks on, sometimes three. And now he says, no, yeah, we didn't really need to do that. So listen, Anthony Fauci, if it was the teachers union, you get behind that microphone, you bend it down so it goes right to your mouth because it's you're a lot shorter than most, and you make that statement. The teachers unions are looking out for the teachers, and that's fine, but it's hurting these kids. They have very minimal risk, and if the teachers have underlying conditions, please take note. They're going to need some compensation pay. It'll be a good opportunity for a substitute to get some real time, but I think these kids need to be back in school. And if you don't have that ability, you meet with some school psychologists, and you understand some of the damage is being done, but he never acknowledged that. Now he wants to acknowledge it to sell books. We remember, though. Cut 24.
That right now we have to start implementing both containment and mitigation. And what was done when you do closing the school is mitigation. If you have a situation in which you don't have a real good control over an outbreak and you allow children to gather together, they likely will get infected. And if they get infected, the likelihood that they will bring the infection home.
Right. So just leave them at home. Leave it home. What could go wrong? And by the way, worst comes to worst, just tell them to pick up the phone, pick up the laptop, pick up the iPad, and keep themselves busy. Maybe introduce them to the Xbox. Oh, really? Our kids are unmotivated. They don't have any friends. They're manically depressed. Their grades have dropped. I wonder why Anthony Fauci. Well, if we listened to him, they would have been back in school in 2 weeks. Really? Tell that to Donald Trump, who tried to do that, got absolutely no support. Not a word from President Biden when he took over to open up the schools. I urge you to do so. And then we watched as Black Lives Matter tore apart cities. And he said it's okay because most of them are wearing masks. I'm not kidding. You remember that? Never did the right thing. He's a politician trying to sell books still. And everybody's covering for him. Cut 25.
Could the coronavirus have been developed at Wuhan as part of a gain-of-function study?
Not from the grant that was given by the NIH to study the viruses that they were studying.
It either somehow came out of a lab where Chinese scientists went into the environment and got infected and played with it and came out, or it was a natural spillover from an animal to a human in the Wuhan market. I keep an open mind that we still don't know what the origin is.
You are unbelievable. Your mind was shut. And we even had it, and I'll pull it back at some point, with that book on tape. When asked about people's refusal to get the COVID-19 shot, the vaccine, he was going to force it down, to threaten their jobs, threaten the schools, threaten their position at the university. Then they'll do it. It shows that people will get off their high horse and do it, while condemning all other people like Joe Rogan or anybody else who said, you know, ivermectin might be effective. I might try my own way. I'm not really comfortable getting this vaccine. And then you try to cancel them through social media and your other henchmen. Just sickening. And now he's defending his reputation on tour. Please, because he looks like your grandfather, do not give him a pass. Guy's made millions of dollars working on the government dole. He looks at himself as a hero. He never was. Irreparable damage, because he won't be around for the next pandemic. And no one is going to trust what anybody says, especially without any humility. Just absolutely crazy. Here's more. Cut 26.
Clearly, SARS and COVID was a moving target. Then the scientific process will have you gather information and say, well, wait a minute. Maybe this is the way it was in January and February, but this virus is different now.
Yeah.
Or we are dealing with new information that we didn't have before. That's get confused. Yeah. People think that science doesn't know what they're doing. Yeah. That's the problem.
It does wear and tear on you. I mean, knowing that there are people who are just hell-bent on trying to discredit you, and they have no evidence about anything.
Right.
And all you've done all your life, your professional life, for me, 54 years and almost 40 years as director, have done nothing but try to save lives.
Right, exactly. And by doing it, you didn't open up your ears. You didn't open up your eyes. You deny working back channels to get your point across. You deny working with others to make sure this whole lab leak theory didn't get forward. Then you quickly switch and says it's a possibility, but not likely. And now you say, my mind is open. We remember when it wasn't, because you had control back then. You wanted the control. For whatever reason, go see a psychologist. Then you have cameras following you around everywhere. You never turn down an interview. Remember, Dr. Makary said, I get all kind of crazy requests. I'd have to turn them down. Anthony Fauci would be doing these requests from the smallest podcast to the biggest. Remember, he's talking to Steph Curry a few weeks into this pandemic. Yes, first let's deal with the Golden State Warriors and answer their questions. Next, we'll handle the country. All right, when we come back, Rich Delgado is doing a great thing. He's one of the sports management people's sports insiders in all different sports. He's got a very successful insurance company. He also has a Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic that'll feature everyone from Mike Tyson to Mike Strahan to Justin Tuck to country music star Jillian Cardinelli, Adam Schefter, all for a great cause, St. Jude's. He is here. It's going to be in the area. Tickets still remain. Opportunities to get foursomes out there in Huntington, New York is still a possibility for a great cause coming up this June, this Friday, June 23rd to June 24th. Back in a moment with Rich.
Want even more, Brian? Download the podcast at BrianKilmeadShow.com. Every episode, exclusive interviews on demand. More of Kilmeade coming up. He's so busy, he'll make your head spin. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back. Rich Delgado, our guest. If you're watching on Fox Nation, you can see him. You remember him, Big Daddy. He is running Coastal Advisors, president of Coastal Advisors LLC Insurance. deals with a lot of athletes and everybody involved in sports. He's one of the leading sports analysts out there, sports business analysts out there, and he's doing something great. He's got the Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic, June 23rd to 24th in Huntington, New York. So if you're listening, especially on WABC, you want to get involved, you have an opportunity. It's all for a great cause for St. Jude's. Welcome back, Rich.
Hey, Brian. Thanks for having me, as always.
So St. Jude is now fully on board, right?
They took it over, so I stand corrected. It's the St. Jude Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic.
Oh, fantastic. And who's the type of people that would be golfing out there?
Well, the celebrities, you know, you have your usuals, the Justin Tucks, the Michael Strahans, the Adam Schefters, Kevin Weeks. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We have more celebrities than we do holes to put them at.
Wow. So that's interesting. So you go out there, you sign up, you get to golf with a celebrity.
Yes. Every foursome gets a celebrity. And then at night, we have a gala, and we have a performance by Michael Martucci. He has a 17-piece orchestra, and he does Michael Sing Sinatra.
All right. Fantastic. It's not just Joe Piscopo singing Sinatra. There's
no,
other
no,
people.
No, absolutely. We got a real guy.
So how long have you been involved in sports?
How long? I've been involved 30 years now. I mean, it seems like it was just yesterday, but, you know, the ride is steady, and the I call it the portfolio or resource book grows bigger and bigger because you keep meeting new people in higher places.
Right. So you went to University of Maryland. Yeah. Were you, your roommate was Neil O'Donnell for the Steelers Jets fame. Mm-hmm. And then you went, you didn't go pro, but almost everybody you did, you were around, went pro.
Yes.
And then you were in and around the Giants, and you have not missed a Super Bowl in what, 25 years?
Actually, last year was my first one.
Vegas.
Yeah. I didn't go to Vegas, and I didn't go to San Francisco that year.
Right.
You know, it was just.
But your goal is to get these guys insured, correct?
Yes. We insure them on and off the field for career-ending insurance, for life insurance. We want to make sure we protect them A to Z.
Right. So we're watching now the NBA finish up. The NHL's probably got one or two more games. We're up to game six now with Florida and Edmonton. But with football, they go to a five-week hiatus, but then they're going to start up again. Your thoughts about the health of this league and your thoughts about the close of the UFL. The USFL, we watched it. The XFL, we watched it. They get together. You would have been in, if you didn't go to the NFL, you would have probably been in the UFL right now because you were just on the cusp of making it. Mm-hmm. Your thoughts about the talent.
I think the talent is there. And remember, every team, you can only have so many guys. So it's 53. You have a taxi squad, and then you have a pool of guys all out there that are itching to be a part of it. Well, there's your base to go and get those guys because they're playing, you know, instead of sitting around and
working. Because the practice squad, you're not getting action in.
Yeah.
There's something about game speed, correct?
Yeah. It's a much better deal than being on a practice squad.
So, you know, in the past, people had the wrong model. They tried to take the NFL on. These guys are not taking the NFL on. So the Fox owns it. And Redbird owns it, mm-hmm. and two of the very successful organizations.
Yep.
So what do you think has to happen next?
I think the NFL has to get more involved. And what I mean by that is that if you want great talent or great product on the field, you have to make sure that that pool of talent, you know, you got to make sure that that pool of talent is good talent.
Right.
So by doing that, you know, you're making sure that you're getting the right talent to come in and
look, you have a quarterback that hasn't seen the field.
Yeah.
And then he's carrying the clipboard. And then you say, hey, why don't you go play for Birmingham? And you go and you watch him for four quarters. The problem is your game is physical.
Yes.
And you're one play away. Do you want to? That's the question. But if you're being paid by the NFL and you're working for Birmingham Stallions, makes it interesting, too.
Almost
like baseball.
Because you're still practicing your trade. You're not sitting around. I'm working out and running and all that is not the same as running, tackling, hitting.
And it helps coaches, too, get a start.
Yeah.
Broadcasters as well.
Well, you know, if Kurt Menefee and Tom Brady and those guys, you know, they get extra
A-team.
Work. Yeah, they get. And listen, yeah, Joe Klatt. I mean, you're getting big-time announcers doing the games.
So the big question is, Fox spent $700 million, I get, getting Tom Brady, and people thought, well, he's not going to do broadcasting. Your thoughts about how, what are the people saying, how serious he's taking it?
Knowing him, he's not going to do something not to do it the right way. So I know he's taking it serious. And for all those people out there that are doubters, listen, they doubted him when he came out of Michigan. They doubted him when he was at New England, and they doubted him when he went to Tampa. But he still gets the job done, and he will do a great job.
Yeah, it's very interesting because Joe Buck did show up, too, at the UFL final. And, of course, he's with ESPN now.
Yeah.
And he was a friend of yours, too.
Very
right?
good friend, and he's one of the great voices of sports.
Right. When you look international, now we're going to have games going overseas. What has that meant to this league, money-wise?
Well, it brings more money. It brings exposure to the brand, and it's educating, trying to bring in more people. So we'll, like, use, like, soccer, right? Soccer is a big thing globally.
Globally.
And the NFL, I know, is not anywhere near that. The NFL would love to be that. But they're not there yet. So that's by expanding their game and their reach. They're trying to get that.
While we found baseball in London, which is fascinating too, correct?
Yeah, that's that was different to see that. But, hey, listen, if there's a field, they'll bring it.
Right. They brought cricket to Eisenhower Park.
Which I attended, by the way.
Did you? 34,000 people. They made an instant stadium. Was that successful?
Yes. It brought so much money to the county. If you would have seen this stadium, I was like, whoa.
Did you know what was going on,
no,
Rich?
No, I sat there. I was more worried about, hey, can I get another bottle of water and some lunch?
Right.
You know, but watching, but the job that Bruce Blakeman did, the job Nassau
County
that Patrick
Executive.
Ryder did.
Police Commissioner.
Yeah, they did incredible. There was no issues. There was no problems. It was a first-class operation, and the county made a lot of money.
Where is Aaron Rodgers? Missing camp? Is that a big deal? Mandatory camp?
New York Jets? If it's mandatory, he's supposed to be there.
Is it a big deal at 40?
I don't think so, but, you know, that's my opinion. There's other people that are going to whine and cry and this and that. Well, let the guy just blew his Achilles out. Let him come back.
I'm just so glad he's not running with RFK because that would be the ultimate solar plexus shot by the New York Jets. So it's the St. Jude's Big Daddy Celebrity Golf Classic. Where do we go if we want to participate?
www.stjude.org/Big Daddy Golf.
And I'll tell you, whether it's Tyson or Shrayan walking around, everyone's friendly to you. Your chance to interact because they all have great respect for you, Rich.
Well, thank you. Yes, they all do.
Thank you.
From the Fox News Podcasts Network. Subscribe and listen to the Trey Gowdy Podcast. Former federal prosecutor and four-term U.S. congressman from South Carolina brings you a one-of-a-kind podcast. Subscribe and listen now by going to foxnewspodcasts.com. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.